ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Patricia Carvelis here. I'm the host of the Politics Now podcast, and I spend a lot of time talking to politicians, usually grilling them. But over summer, I want to introduce you to the people behind the politics.
People think politicians love talking about themselves, but it's not really the case.
I genuinely am not actually going to... Well, who? No, I'm not going to name any names.
Why not?
No, I'm not.
You can find the interview series in the Politics Now podcast feed.
Board members quit, the chairman and then the director stepped down, and almost 200 participants pulled out. And so this year's Adelaide Writers' Week is no longer. It's been axed after outrage over the board's decision to remove a Palestinian-Australian author from the rundown because of cultural sensitivities in the wake of the Bondi attack. Today, Dennis Muller from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at Melbourne Uni on the damage done and what it means for free speech. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Dennis, why don't we start by having a quick look at the work of Randa Abdel-Fattah. Now, just tell me who she is, because before now, of course, many of us would never have heard of her.
Well, she's a Palestinian author. She's a lawyer. She's been an outspoken advocate for the Palestinian people. She's an academic.
My mother's Egyptian background. My father is Palestinian. So I've grown up very much raised what I would call as somebody sort of in the diaspora of empire. So I've also grown up with a strong sense of my conviction and faith as a Muslim. And all of this has really shaped the kind of worlds that I navigate and the causes that I speak up about so passionately.
And she's written this book called Discipline. Mm. And that was the book she was scheduled to speak about in Adelaide. And it's really ironical because the book, it's about... who has the right to tell the story? Who has the right to be heard? And especially in the context of Gaza, this has become a really important topic of media ethics. And so it's a real irony that a book discussing issues like this should now not be discussed at the Adelaide Writers' Festival because of a view that the author's presence would be culturally insensitive.
The Adelaide Festival Board has removed a pro-Palestinian advocate from its lineup for the 2026 Writers' Week in the wake of the Bondi terror attack.
The future of Australia's longest-running Writers' Festival is in serious doubt, with most of its guest authors pulling out.
The director of Adelaide Writers' Week has resigned after days of furore over the decision to cancel a scheduled appearance by a Palestinian-Australian author.
Breaking news for you, this year's Adelaide Writers' Week event has been cancelled. The event's board says it made the decision to rescind the author's invitation, quote, out of respect for a community experiencing the pain from a devastating event. Instead, the board says it created more division and have shared their sincere apologies.
In the past, of course, and quite recently, she has faced sustained criticism, including from Jewish groups. In 2024, she did say, if you are a Zionist, you have no claim or right to cultural safety. Then in an Instagram post, she wrote, may 2025 be the end of Israel.
Yeah, now they are extreme statements, and I wouldn't for one moment agree with them. But the question is, the term Zionist applies, as I understand it, to a particular political subgroup of the Israeli nation and the Jewish people. And the second statement, it seems to be more directed at the Jewish state. Now, it would be easy for people to consider those to be anti-Semitic, but one of the complexities in all this is that there are competing definitions of what anti-Semitism is. And they're quite different when it comes to this question of distinguishing between the State of Israel and the Jewish people. So I would myself not endorse those statements, and I wouldn't think they were right at any time. But to now bring them up in the post-Bondi context, I think makes a case against her which she ought to have been given the opportunity to answer, and she wasn't. So there's a natural justice problem as well here.
There is a distinction between Zionism as a political ideology and Jewish people. I have never, ever attacked Jewish people. I am attacking a political ideology and the state in which is carrying out a genocide against my people. This is what the issue is here for me.
Well, there was questioning about these comments back at the time because she's also, of course, an academic at Macquarie University. Now, Vice-Chancellor Bruce Dowton, he was questioned by the Labor MP Josh Burns about her comments during a parliamentary committee into anti-Semitism on campuses last year.
Now, we're talking about a university professor who works for you saying that there should be no safe spaces for a particular group of people. We're talking about a university professor who is using her platform to call for the end of the destruction of a particular state.
I have made statements about the university's position on racism, vilification, anti-Semitism. I do point out that the particular academic staff member's statement was about cultural safety, which is not defined under Australian law. And that has been a conundrum.
So these comments have not gone unnoticed even before Bondi.
That's true. And despite that, she was invited to appear at the Adelaide Festival. And now it seems that she's to be uninvited because of this criterion of cultural sensitivity. She's not being accused, in fact, of racism. She's not being accused of anti-Semitism. The reason given by the board is cultural insensitivity. Now, that's an extremely low bar when you're thinking about abridging free speech, because we've seen plenty of incidences in the past, in the quite recent past, where people have been hounded out over cultural insensitivity. For example, after Stan Grant had made his remarks on the occasion of the coronation of Prince Charles, of King Charles, I should say, that the impact of the monarchy on the Australian Aboriginal people had been disastrous. Now, that led to a campaign against him, and no one used the term cultural insensitivity, but it was the same thing. Mm. And, I mean, where does this cultural sensitivity criterion end, you have to ask yourself?
Now, this, of course, Dennis, is a decision supported by the South Australian Premier, Peter Malinauskas, although he does say he did not direct the board in any way.
I've made clear to the board every single step of the way that I have a view, but I also made clear to the board that I wouldn't be instructing them or intervening on them or threatening cancelling funding or anything like that.
His comments are a bit of a puzzle to me. What was the process by which his opinion was obtained? I mean, it seems from what he said that the board invited him to give an opinion. Why would the board do that? Perhaps because the South Australian government is a funder of the festival. So in the world of real politics, it might have been considered an appropriate thing to do. But I think the difficulty that while saying that he didn't direct the board, he said he was happy to have made it clear to the board that he would be supportive of the cancellation. His record is that of a liberal-minded man. And so I'm puzzled as to why Mr. Malinauskas has taken this position this time.
Now, the writer has accused the festival board of blatant and shameless anti-Palestinian racism.
So it's just an extremely racist and obscene attempt to associate me with an atrocity that, I mean, it goes without saying that I had nothing to do with. I cannot believe in 2026 that I, a Palestinian who have witnessed my people's live stream genocide for 2 years, are now having to say publicly I have nothing to do with the Bondi atrocities, and at what point will Palestinians be allowed to be present in the public space without being constructed as threats and enemies?
The board, it hasn't suggested that her writings have any connection with the Bondi tragedy. She's engaged a lawyer. What do you make of her reaction?
Well, I think it's predictable. You have to ask where the racism allegation rests, on what footing does that rest? Is she saying she has been excluded on the basis of her Palestinian race? Well, that is not the basis upon which the board has said it's proceeded. It seems pretty obvious to me that, from all that we know, is that it's her political views that she's been silenced for.
Well, Dennis, the event now has, of course, been cancelled, and that came not long after the director, Louise Adler, quit. She said she cannot be party to silencing writers.
Yeah, it's a very severe statement, a very strong statement from Louise Adler. One of the most interesting statements in it was this. In my view, boards composed of individuals with little experience in the arts and blind to the moral implications of abandoning the principle of freedom of expression have been unnerved by the pressure exerted by politicians calculating their electoral prospects and relentless, coordinated letter-writing campaigns. We've seen it over and over again. This incapacity, I think, by people without a sufficient background in the arts or the media making these decisions under pressure. I think Peter Grester, the former journalist who was imprisoned in Egypt, you might remember, for the crime of being a journalist, he said that this is just playing into the hands of the terrorists, that their objective, for one of them, is to destroy what we call the grey zone, this zone between the extremes of black and white, where we expect to be able to have civilized debate on matters of contention. And so, yeah, I think that we need to look at the way in which we compose these boards and make sure that there are people on them who've got the requisite political and intellectual backgrounds to consider these issues more sensibly.
All right, well, Dennis, let's then consider the longer-lasting ramifications of this decision, because critics of the decision, of course, say this goes to free speech. Is there or should there be a limit to free speech in the wake of an atrocity like Bondi?
I think if we're going to create limits on free speech in response to individual events, we're going to end up in a state of great confusion and inconsistency. In no civilized society is the right of free speech absolute. We've got laws. We've got laws of defamation, contempt of court, racial discrimination, and so on. But we've also got the liberal standard, which was set down by John Stuart Mill, in 1859? And it says that the boundaries of free speech lie at the point where the person's exercising of their freedom of speech does harm to other people. I think the harm principle is an enduring touchstone, really, and we should look at each of the cases that come up against that standard. What is the harm that is being done to whom? And then we have to, of course, ask ourselves the question about proportionality. Is the harm of a sufficiently serious nature to justify the silencing of someone's speech? I think it's better to have a kind of a solid base in principle like that rather than try to make rules anew as each new situation comes up.
Well, the board of the festival has now apologised to Randa Abdel-Fattah, saying the decision was not about identity or dissent, but it was about a shift in the national discourse around freedom of expression following the worst terror attack in Australia's history. So, Dennis, in your view then, what should we take away from this whole episode? What are the boundaries of free speech, and who should be setting those boundaries?
Well, certainly the boundaries of free speech are not set at the level of cultural sensitivity. It's just too low a bar. I think Peter Grest is entirely right. I think it plays into the hands of the terrorists because it divides us and it makes it harder for us to operate our democracy in this vital area of the grey zone where we're meant to be able to discuss matters of contention in peace.
Dennis Muller is a senior research fellow at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne, and he's also co-host of the podcast Truth, Lies and Media. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed, audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.